Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of The Beat. I'm Brendan Quinn from The Athletic. Nick Baumgartner not with us this week, welcoming his beautiful daughter into the world, his second child. You remember Nick, right, Austin? I guess I shouldn't spoil who our guest is here first, but our guest this week, we are very fortunate to have Austin Hatch, formerly of Michigan basketball, presently out about in the world doing some great things in public speaking. And Austin, how are you, my man? It is so good to see you again.
I'm doing great, Brendan. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. And yeah, it's great to be with you. So thanks for having me. And yeah, I look forward to our conversation.
Yeah. I imagine you remember Nick from back in the day. I guess he would have been sure. At MLive sure. In the free press when you were still at the program.
His first daughter?
Had a son and now has had his first daughter this week.
Awesome.
Yes.
Well, please give him my congratulations and well wishes for next time you talk to him.
For the listeners, I connected with Nick this morning and everyone is happy and healthy. He's doing great and super excited for him. So congratulations to the Baumgartners. Awesome. Awesome stuff. So Austin, I was trying to think earlier today of our last conversation, in any like formal setting, right, outside of just texting or doing kind of catching up and stuff like that. And I think it would have been a kind of like an exit interview type deal during your last year at Michigan, when we sat down and you kind of just unpacked, you know, your college career and all that stuff. And I remember even then, like, you were already making the old guy jokes, like, I'm getting old, you know, I'm getting a little out of shape. Now you're actually old. How's adult life?
You know, it's one of the benefits of suffering that, you know, occurring injuries that I did, not a benefit. There was no benefit to it, but right. I got to retire from the game early, if you will, right? I mean, you know, early retirement is the dream for most people. So I guess you could call that the silver lining, if there isn't, and not to make light of the situation.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm fully retired now, and I try to stay in shape, try to stay lean. So my wife still has a crush on me.
Nice.
Fortunately, I've been able to do up to this point. So yeah, we're a little over two years in, and loving it.
I saw it recently. I think you posted a picture of you and Abby in Maine. It was like right out of an L.L. Bean catalog or something.
Yeah. We took a little birthday trip. To Maine because you know, here's the great thing. So I don't have to worry about vacation days, right?
Right.
I'm my own boss, and you know, it's nice. I can kind of, you know, make my own schedules. And I'm not working. We're not generating revenue for our business, right?
Right. Right.
So you can't just always be take time off. But the beauty of this remote work environment is, you know, we're able to go and, you know, put in our, you know, it doesn't matter if wherever we are, we can work from anywhere. Because, you know, as long as you're online getting stuff done, it doesn't matter where you are, you know. So just got to be able to turn. The nice thing was for us both, you know, we both turn it on from, you know, nine to four,
mm-hmm.
and put our work in. And then, you know, outside of that. But if we wanted to go for a little hike at lunchtime or, you know,
yeah,
it worked well. So, yeah, we really enjoyed it. And, yeah, I don't want to say it's a benefit of this time, but it's. You know, it's
I mean, we're all put in this very weird situation, so it is what you make of it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And last I remember, Abby was working within the university. Is that still the case?
Yep, she works in development for the athletic department. Yep, so she works for Katie Fromman.
Okay.
Yep.
And you guys are based in Ann Arbor, obviously. Then still,
yep, we are. We actually live in the condo where I lived in college.
Okay.
We're going to be here for probably another year or so. We're saving up for a house, but
mm-hmm.
Ann Arbor, our housing market's a little pricey.
A little bit.
we're saving, you know, we're trying to live below our means right now. And mm-hmm. Welcoming, you know, trying to save for whatever the future holds for us. So we got a puppy now. He's about two. He's a little over two. Benny, he's a golden retriever.
Oh,
he's
awesome. Man. Awesome.
Keeping us busy for sure. Giving us a little taste of additional responsibility. So it's fun.
You're in that very interesting age where, you know, you and your college friends, everyone kind of starts to see everyone go in their their different directions, right? And everyone kind of starts to find themselves and find their way and all that stuff. Anyone amongst your former, you and your group, anyone among you a little surprising in what they're doing?
I wouldn't say surprising, but I probably, out of all my former teammates, I probably keep in touch with Duncan the most. Mm. And look, I'm not talking to him every day. He's very busy. Right. But, yeah, we talk maybe once a month or so, and you know, just tell him I'm proud of him. And but you said surprised. I don't know that I'm surprised by what he's doing. I remember this would be interesting for the listeners probably. So our senior year, Duncan and I were in the same class, and our senior year, we would go to lunch together maybe once a month, roughly, and just talk about, you know, life and things beyond school and sports and, you know, our plans for the future, things like that. And I remember we went to lunch in at a place called Demos in Ann Arbor, mm-hmm. on Stadium. And I asked him, like, hey, man, like, what are your – so this was in maybe April. This was after we got back from the Final
right.
Four.
Right.
And we were just talking about things and how everything went and everything. And obviously we didn't win, which was disappointing. But I said, so what are your plans from here? You think are you going to go try to play in Europe or what do you think? And he's like, no, I'm going to play in the NBA. Like he had that vision for himself. That wasn't the first time he said that. I'm sure he, from the time that he was at Williams College, he probably thought he was going to find a way to get to the NBA. So it's like, I would say I'm not surprised, but it's just so cool to see him.
Yeah.
He was just one of the guys I saw in the locker room every day, and now he's one of two teams playing for an NBA championship. So
yeah. And you watch him last night. I mean, he's out there checking like LeBron on a switch or something. And we've now been watching it for 2 years, him on the court with some of these guys, but even still, like there's Duncan checking LeBron in the NBA finals. Like this is not reality.
No, it's quite cool. It's really, really cool. So couldn't be happier for him. And I mean, you know, great to see. I went and saw Mo play. So he played in LA for a little while to start. And then sure. I have family in LA where I lived, you know, before coming mm-hmm. to Michigan. Mm-hmm. And Abby and I went out to see them, see my relatives in California. And Mo got us some tickets to the Lakers game, which is cool. So we got to go out there and go see him play out there. And, you know, and we went in the locker room after the game and just said hi and just, you know, it's so cool to see them. All my teammates are doing well in different facets, right? You know, like right. I don't want to say that I don't know that any of my former teammates are married. I don't think any of them are. But they're playing in the NBA, right?
Yeah.
It's like marriage, NBA, having great careers, you know, whatever it is. It's like, it's just cool to see everyone doing well.
And, you know, like teams like that, that go to the Final Four, that have the success and the experiences that team did, you know, they're bound forever, right? You'll all be welcomed back 20 years from now as that team, right? And you'll be honored at half court and so on and so forth. But, you know, right now, are guys still in touch or is it just so soon after school that guys are all just kind of focusing on their own deal?
Yeah, well, you got a lot of guys, you know, getting their lives started, right? You know, whether that's them starting their careers in the pros or so. I mean, we don't talk. It's not like we're texting each other every day or every week.
Sure, sure.
But you know, it's, you know, in a case message here or there, you know, thinking of you, brother. Hope all is well. Glad to see you're doing great things in the league. Or you know, I've had a couple of guys, you know, some guys reach out to me, just checking in, just to say hi and follow up. And yeah, so it's really cool. And I actually, so Coach Beilein has a house in Northern Michigan now.
Right.
Right. And I was up there visiting my grandpa. And I called him and that was in June. And then this is crazy. So there's a Meyer in town in Petoskey. Mm-hmm. And I pulled up, ran in just really quick just to grab a couple of things from my grandpa that night for dinner. And a guy with a mask on comes up to me. And like he said, hey, I was looking the other way. And he says, hey, Austin, sounded just like Coach Bion. I looked at him and I almost couldn't even recognize him because I had a mask on, which is probably a good thing. He had a mask and a hat on.
Sure.
It's probably good for him, sir, because people don't know who I can't tell right. But yeah, just so cool. I mean, like that vibe, especially, you know, for Coach and I, you know, given everything that we went through together and the fact that he stood by me the whole time. And yeah, I mean, I think it's a relationship that we'll have for the rest of my life, at least.
Weren't you married on the lake that he lives on?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yep. He took his boat to the wedding.
That's
right. Yeah. Yeah. So it's really cool. He's a special man for sure. Very special man. And Coach Howard, you know, I don't think there's, you know, it's hard to replace a guy like Coach Beilein.
Sure.
You know, but Coach Howard's the man for the job. If anyone's going to replace him, it's Coach Howard. And, you know, he's a great guy, leads the team the right way. But I mean, I didn't play for Coach Howard, but just as far as the, you know, I'm sure he coaches, has a different style than Coach Beilein. But just the how much he cares about the guys. I mean, I'm sure that's very similar, I think, the vibe I get.
Right.
So, you know, I my wife and I live a mile from Chrysler right now. And prior to COVID, I'd go to the gym and lift there a couple times a week and work out. And Coach Sanderson's very nice to let me still come and work out. He said I have a lifetime membership. I'm trying to take advantage of it. And I said it went to Coach Howard to make sure it was okay if I still come. And he's like, you're part of the family. You know what I mean? So just that kind of a guy. You can just tell just for that one thing. He said you can tell what kind of a guy he is. So
yeah, yeah.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So what is your kind of connection to the game at this point? You know, when you spent so much of your life in and around basketball. I mean, even when you weren't technically on the team, you were still with the team. Like, you were still within the confines of basketball, we'll say, right?
Yeah.
So how do you kind of scratch that itch nowadays?
It's crazy. It's right. It's early fall. And even over the summer, you know, like in the summertime, I've never watched basketball over the summer before. No one has.
Right.
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 Because of this whole COVID deal and with, you know, the NBA bubble at Disney, you know, playing. And it was always cool to be able to watch the NBA over the summer. But yeah, you know, I watch games and, you know, in my mind, I still like kind of like pay attention to the plays teams are running. And I'm like, okay, like I'm familiar. Like I remember running that, you know, back when I played or my time at Michigan. So I still kind of, I get that itch. I do really miss playing. Of course, I haven't really played in 10 years, you know, the way I played at one time in my life. You know, it's fun to get to watch it and kind of relive. And sometimes I'll think about, you know, games that I remember playing back in high school.
Right.
I'll just kind of relive those in my mind. It's fun to think about, but, you know, I'm very thankful that we're in the stage we're in too, because it's like, well, I love playing basketball. You know, in college, my 4 years in college were amazing. A lot of people say college is the best 4 years of your life, and that's understandable to some degree. But it's like, you know, what better could I have right now? I'm married to an incredible, incredible woman, Abby, and I mean, I think my goal is to make every 4 years the best 4 years. So,
I see. I'm not sure if the 4 years I had in college were my four best years, because I don't remember them. So, the Austin, for you now, right? You are embarking on a speaking career, motivational speaking, working with organizations and businesses, church groups, right? And spreading your message and telling your story, and you know, that is an interesting kind of career path, in that there's no blueprint really for I'm going to do this for a living, right? You don't major in that in college and then have like a, you know, step-by-step guide to go do it. So how have you kind of embarked on figuring out what this looks like, right? And then I guess you're basically like a your own small business. And there's a lot that goes into that.
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. And there's a lot that you, there's a, like, you think you know what you're getting into, but you really don't.
Right.
And you know, it's been amazing. And, yeah, you know, I'm just so focused on providing value. That's my goal, is to provide value. And, you know, I feel if you consistently provide enough value for long enough, then you're able to do it for a living. That's like what I did. You know, I spoke for the first time in college a few times my senior year. Got paid a little bit, you know, but then even while I was at Domino's, they were gracious enough to let me go speak, because they kind of, my boss there kind of understood that, you know, this is kind of part of my bigger calling, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so if you just continually provide value for people, eventually you'll be able to earn a living doing it. And, you know, I'm grateful for the opportunity it's given me. I'm not thankful for what I've been through, of course, but that's not really my message. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the backstory. That maybe that kind of sets the stage. Maybe that gives me, I don't know, permission to talk about the things I talk about, or maybe it gives the audience a different perspective on my message when they hear what I've been through and hear what the perspective from which I'm sharing it.
Sure.
But yeah, I talk about overcoming adversity. We all face adversity every single day, right, of various forms. And everyone in the world right now with COVID and everything else is facing adversity. And unfortunately, we'll all continue to face adversity for the rest of our life, not from COVID, but from life challenges, right? Mm-hmm. We all face challenges. And, you know, I hope and pray people don't go through anything life-threatening like what I did, but a challenge is a challenge as far as I'm concerned, whether that's a difficulty at work, getting laid off, something with your family, something with your sports team, your teammates, you're not interacting well with your teammates, or for a coach, you can't get your players to, you know, have the growth mindset like Coach Beyond talked about all the time. And
sure.
So we all face adversity. And, you know, like the point you just made a few minutes ago about how there's no blueprint for it, right? And I kind of looked at it as, like, there was no blueprint to recover from a level 7 traumatic brain injury and get to Michigan. Right. There's no blueprint for that, right? And why can't I write it, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's kind of how I looked at it. And, like, you know, for small business owners, I mean, if you're passionate about something and you're willing to sacrifice for it, you can become great at it. And look, I have a lot of room to grow. I mean, I'm in chapter 1 of a hypothetical 20-page or 20-chapter book, right? So I got a lot of room to improve, which is great, because it's like, you know, like Coach Beilein, he was famous for, you know, turning under-recruited guys like Caris LeVert, Nick Stauskas, guys like that, and make them extremely good. Duncan Robinson,
right?
Turn them into really good players. And so I think it's, you know, when you recognize the opportunity you have to improve, it's exciting. So yeah, we're loving it. And I'm grateful for the impact that I'm able to make, you know, because I've been very fortunate to speak to companies like, you know, Northwestern Mutual. I spoke to Northwestern Mutual in Michigan a few weeks ago. I'm speaking to several other Northwestern offices this fall. Mm-hmm. Mass Mutual, Thrivent Financial, Ford, mm-hmm. Accenture, Wells Fargo, like a bunch of companies, right? So I'm very, very grateful for the opportunities I've had. But like I said, I'm just so focused on providing value. And that it doesn't provide value for every organization, but every sales team, every team in every organization faces challenges. And if I can share one thing I've learned the hard way that'll help one person on their team overcome the challenges they face, I feel like that's my job. So.
For sure. And something I think that's pretty cool is, you know, because of the nature of what, you know, this show is in our listenership, like I imagine most of our listeners that have really followed your story closely since it all really went down, you know, whatever it was, 8 years, 10 years ago. And remember, you know, you arriving at Michigan and speaking publicly for the first time, and then becoming someone who spoke a little bit more and a little bit more. And then as a senior, you know, spoke even more publicly and stuff like that. And to now see you doing this, you know, for people that have followed this long, followed you for so long, it has to be really, really, really cool. And I'm curious from you, as you do this, you know, public speaking is hard, man. Like it is, right? The greatest fear. That's like the most cited natural fear that everyone has. So you know, for you in learning how to do this, what has that kind of process been like of becoming, because you're a you're a competitive guy. So you're going to want to be I think see this as like, I want to be I don't want to just be a public speaker. I want to be a really good public speaker.
For sure.
And so what is that process like of learning how to present yourself, how to speak, and you know, feeding off of audience response? Like, there's so much that goes into actually being good at what you're trying to be good at.
Yeah. And look, I mean, like I said, I have a lot of room to grow, a lot of room to improve. And one of the things that I do, pretty much every single presentation, it's filmed or recorded. Mm-hmm. And then I get the recording of that. So I can watch film. Like we, anyone who knows anything about Coach Beilein and the way he coached, we watch more film than probably just by any program in the country, right? Yeah. But it's like, now it's like, I present, I think about what I did right. And even if I think I did something right, when I see the film of it, when I see the recording of it, it's like, okay, so I thought I did this right, but yeah, I can definitely work on that. I can definitely do this better. I did this really well. This play, I ran the right way. You know, because you kind of have, like, no message that I give is the same, mm-hmm. but you have very similar plays that you run at different times throughout the presentation. Like, you're not going to play any team the same way. Mm-hmm. But Coach Beilein, we had our offense, right, that we would run. And we'd run different plays from that, within that offense at different points in the game. Kind of like that. And it's like when you're speaking, no two presentations are the same. But you kind of have plays in the back of your mind that you should run at certain times, and that maybe that's 1 minute different or 2 or 3 minutes different in every presentation, but it's roughly the same time. So it's like you don't press at the very beginning of the game, and you press towards the end of the game. So you have those things you bring in at the very end, right? But then you have different plays you run in the beginning. So, you know, like I said, I'm learning. I have a lot of room to grow, a lot of room to improve. But yeah, you know, it's like I approach speaking the same way that I approached my journey, to being a great basketball player originally from when I was young, in the same way that I approached my road to recovery from the injuries that almost took my life in the second plane crash. And if my dad always told me, he said, "Aus, go big or go home. If you're going to go after something, why not go all in, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm going to speak for a living, why set the goal of being average? If you set the goal of being average, you're probably, at the very best, you're going to be average. But if you set the goal of being great, you may not end up being great, but at the worst, you're going to be pretty solid, right? And so being solid is not the goal. My goal is to be really good and convey a message that provides a lot of value, as I mentioned about the whole conversation about providing value we had a few minutes ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if I just get so focused on providing value, I think in any business, I think people will pay you for it, right?
Right.
And you'll get opportunities to do it. So, you know, I'm just so grateful for, you know, the fact that I've learned some lessons the hard way, and I'm grateful for the opportunity that I now have to share some of the lessons that I learned with others in the hopes that it'll help them overcome the adversity they're facing in their own life, sure, in their own business, with their family, whatever it may be. So,
you get nervous on stage at all?
It's not nerves. I don't think it's nerves. It's like I knew I was doing the right thing before I spoke those first few times in college. Well, that's how I really got into it. Was I spoke for the first time to Aaron's House in Fort Wayne, that organization, that nonprofit that, you know, serves, you know, children and families who've lost members of the family, which tragically I can relate to. I spoke there, and then I spoke a few more times after that. I get the same feeling I would get before a big game. It's not nerves. It's just excitement. It's excitement / anxiousness. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you, when you know you're prepared, you're not nervous. It's like going into a big exam. It's like if you studied for the week before, it's like you know the stuff, but it's just regurgitating it on paper. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like that. It's like speaking. I know, like, I prepare for every presentation, and it's like if I do my research on the organization, the company, and the people that I'm speaking to, and I know the message I kind of need to deliver, it's just got to go out and execute the game plan. So,
and how do you, or how would you kind of describe how people react to you?
Every organization is a little bit different. But I think, so a lot of the time after I speak, so a lot of organizations like to do some Q&A at the, so people can ask, because I have my message and hopefully that provides a lot of value. I think it does. And but people will ask specific questions, you know, maybe relative to their, maybe pertinent to their own life, and say, hey, I'm dealing with this, or how did you overcome, or how did you feel on this day when, you know, at this stage in your journey? And yeah, I think, you know, I think people, my hope is that it puts things in perspective for people. And that's the response I get a lot of the time, is that it put things in perspective for them. And it doesn't, because I never say, like, you know, what I went through is 10 times worse or 10 times greater than anything you'll ever go through. Of course I don't say that. And I don't, everyone goes through challenges that we know nothing about. But my hope is that it just puts things in perspective that, you know, we can overcome this. Like, even like, cause what's big to people is relative. Like, what's a big challenge to me may not be big to you. It may not, vice versa. And it's like, look, I faced a big one, but I looked at it at, okay, I can't control this, but I know I can control how I respond. And I'm going to do everything in my power to control all the controllables. And I think that message for people alone, because it's like everyone's dealing with something and no one wishes adversity on themselves. We're not thankful that it happens. But if basically my message in one sentence, it's not what happens to us. It's about how we respond. Because if we focus on the things that we control, focus on our response, like, and if we work hard enough for long enough, there's no way we won't overcome it. Right.
Right. I know I asked you this in 2018 when you first kind of told me about you thinking about doing the public speaking, and one of the first things that kind of popped into my head, and that I think people now might be really interested to hear you touch on. I'm not exactly sure how I asked you, but that idea of, I feel like the average person might think that your life experiences and what has happened would be something you would want to move forward for, like move forward from as permanently as possible. Right. And by the nature of what you do though, you are bringing it all up right on a daily basis, that it is something that is still so ever present. So can you explain to people out there, and me obviously, but how you can square those two things, right? Of wanting to not move on, I don't know what the right word is, versus, you know, wanting to use what you have to make a better understanding for people to have of their own life.
No, for sure. So yeah, you know, the events that I went through are terrible, but they're forever actually in my memory. Right. It's just, it's part of me. It's part of my life. And I don't, you know, when I speak, I don't retell the story. I mean, I give a little high level overview of the story. So on that way I do, you know, go back to what happened.
Right.
But my message is focused on the response to it. Right. And I also, regarding the events that happened and the tragedies, the loss of my family, you know, it's like, I don't focus on the fact that, and this doesn't diminish it by any means, but I don't focus on the fact that my family is gone. I focus on the fact that, man, how blessed am I to have had them for the time that I did. And, you know, again, that doesn't diminish the fact that they're gone. It doesn't diminish the pain or significance of that, or emotional, you know, grief, or whatever word you want to use. It doesn't diminish it or rid of it. But I'm so blessed to have had what I did for as long as I did. And, you know, not to compare myself to others, but there are a lot of kids. I wish every kid could have had the upbringing that I did. I wish every kid could have had the upbringing that I did and had that family for the rest of my life. Like, my family, like the life that I had, out of the 7 billion people in the world, probably 6.5 billion at least would have traded anything. I don't want to say traded. But would have just been, man, how, I mean, you had an amazing childhood. I didn't, maybe I should say 6.99 billion would say you had an amazing childhood. I really did. And again, that doesn't diminish it, but I just look at it like, man, the great thing is, Brennan, that I only have happy memories of my childhood growing up. Like my dad was always there. My mom was always there, and my siblings. And it's like, yeah, you know what? It's not like I had a terrible childhood and they passed away. And that's the only thing I can remember are those bad memories of my dad was gone all the time or didn't love me. Right. Like I was loved. What more can you ask for than to be loved? We all want to be loved. Everyone in the world wants to be loved, wants to be shown affection. And yeah, so I'm just so grateful. But yeah, back to those, to that, the part of your question about going back to revisit those. Mm-hmm. It's like, I think it, because I believe that I had, and obviously every person would say this, but I believe I had the greatest dad that has ever existed, right? Mm-hmm. And the lessons I learned from him, a lot of that is tied into my message without me saying it. Things that I talk about, like, you know, the growth mindset, the resilience, the integrity, and doing the common thing in an uncommon way. Right? I mean, I learned that from him. One story I tell pretty consistently. This will give you the kind of idea for the listeners, the kind of guy my dad was. So we would go to the McDonald's near our house for breakfast a couple days a week on the way to school. He would take me to school, or he would take me to carpool to go to school with my best friend, and my best friend's mom would drive us. And I learned this after he passed. The cashier at McDonald's, Josiah was his name, I learned this a couple years ago. One of our family friends told me that cashier, Josiah, was at my parents' funeral after they passed away in the second accident. Josiah probably took the money from thousands of customers every week, or however many customers come to a McDonald's on average, hundreds or thousands or whatever the number is. I mean, something my dad did, like he paid more attention to him, made him feel like he mattered, made him know that he was important. Everyone matters and everything matters, right? Mm-hmm. And there are no little things. And everyone, like, it doesn't matter whether if it's CEO or if it's or the most important people or the janitor at my high school, Mike. Mm-hmm. My dad made the effort to get to know all of those people. And that, and like, that's not that, I mean, I'll just touch on that because I talk about the team first mentality. When I'm talking to companies and organizations, everyone matters. And every person on every team has a role. At Michigan, I couldn't play. I scored 1 point in 4 years. But I like to think I had a role on the team. And right. I took pride in it and did whatever I could to fill that role to the best of my ability. And, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats, right? So, mm-hmm. Yeah, but, you know, I go back to your question, though. Sorry for the long-winded answer.
It's all good.
But, you know, thinking back to those memories, it does. Like, you're going back to the events. I don't like to think about the events. I mean, right. Dude, it is what it is. They're etched in my memory. It is what it is. But I think I can't let two bad days outshine all the other great days that I had.
Right.
So
there you go. I know we are getting a little tight on time.
No, here, you're, right? Fine, you're fine. I got 10, 15 minutes.
So when you're out on the road, right, and you're doing this and, you're speaking, what is the, not end game, but like you talk about, you know, right, the grit and all these messages that you have, what is the thing that you want people walking out kind of left with, right? The that's kind of the impression or the tattoo on them.
Not to touch on my story again, mm-hmm. but I do tell just a really high level 1 minute summary of my story, or like some organizations like to play that ESPN video, you know, the 16 minute deal that was made, the SC featured piece, just kind of give the audience a little background, sure. So they can see where right. I'm from. And my hope is that, not that people compare their stories to mine, but if he can overcome it, why can't I? Mm-hmm. Right? Well,
sure.
I just hope it puts things in perspective for people that, like, you know what I'm going through right now is tough. It sucks. Or sorry to use that word, whatever.
Much worse has been said on this podcast.
Yeah, it's tough. It sucks. Why did this happen to me? I didn't deserve it. I didn't deserve what happened. I don't think I deserve what happened to me. It sucked. It was terrible, right?
Whatever. Right. Use.
Okay. I can't control what happened. I wish I could. Mm-hmm. I wish I could go back 17 years and 9 years, respectively, and make sure those days never happened. But they happened. And the way I look at it is without adversity, we couldn't overcome. Right?
Yeah, sure.
Adversity is opportunity. Maybe it's not the opportunity that we wish for, but it's like the growth mindset. Coach B, I talk about the growth mindset all the time. I'm sure you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's like after a game, he'd come in the locker room, he'd be disappointed, but he'd always say every single time, we didn't lose that many games over my 4 years, but when we did, he'd say, we didn't do this, we didn't do that, we got to be better at this. You know, we're going to run and get in better shape. You guys, we're going to run a lot of suicides and so we can finish the game strong. But then he'd say, we're going to watch the film and we're going to find a way to get better from it. And that's my message, like what I was saying before, about when things happen, watch the film and find a way to get better from it. So I hope that people will whatever they're going through, whatever their challenge is, after my presentation, my hope is that people will think about it, reflect on it a little bit, but then figure out a way to respond to it and overcome it. So,
yeah. The few times that I would have been in the locker room, I would, after a loss, I remember John would rattle off all the things that were done incorrectly. Yep. And then like almost clap back at himself being like, but we're going to work on it and we're going to get better. But then we also did this and this wrong, but we're going to work on it and we're going to get better. No one else is talking. He's just kind of having a like a dialogue with himself, just pacing in the front of the room.
Yeah, you can only imagine how much is going through his mind. He probably said 1% of the things that were going through his mind.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. What's your, do you have a favorite, Beeline, internal story that, I don't know, maybe hasn't been that you haven't shared or that kind of sticks out to you?
I mean, there are several, but yeah, I think, one of the coolest things was, so he won the John Wooden Award at the Final Four 2019, I believe. I spoke and introduced him prior to that FCA, Fellowship of Christian Athletes Award in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
Minneapolis.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I was there for that. That's right.
And I spoke there. I didn't speak there. I just gave a little 5-minute intro. I talked about, mm-hmm. you know, all he's done for me and all he's done for everyone in his programs and how he's changed my life and changed, you know, every player he's ever coached, changed their lives too. And then so Jimmy Dykes and Chris Broussard were the MCs at that event. And they interviewed him and asked some questions. And I said, and so I talked about some of the things that I learned from Coach. You know, I said, what it looks like to lead. I said, you showed us all, like every player has ever coached, you showed us all what it looks like to serve, to lead with integrity. And this is Coach Beyond's definition of leadership. He said, a leader is someone who is very humble and very confident and genuinely cares about those he's leading. That's what he told me. I did an independent study on leadership my senior year. And I said, Coach, you showed us all what it looks like to genuinely care about those you're leading. And right. And you talk about, you look at like the stuff that he's done, not just for me, but for every like all kinds of other people too. I mean, the fact of the matter is that, so the Chris Broussard and Jimmy Dykes asked him afterwards, you know, what'd you learn from Austin, Coach? He told us what he learned from you. What'd you learn from him? And then he listed a few things and whatever, but then, and then they said about, he said to my staff and I, this was a no brainer. When you offer someone a scholarship, mm-hmm. you're going to honor it. It's just what you do. And I think just things like that. But going back to that point though, yeah, the headline, the media, like the newspaper article said, John Beeline honors Austin right. Hatch's scholarship. Great. Right. But people didn't see the day to day. They saw the headline, mm-hmm. but they didn't see every day. Like he included me in everything. Mm-hmm. Never didn't make me feel like I was there like as like a just because like he felt sorry for me or whatever, right?
Sure.
Like he gave me a role and I took pride in it and let me contribute to the team in the ways that I could and made me feel like I mattered, like my role mattered, right? And I'm not saying that I needed that, but just like the fact that he cared about me as, I don't want to say, I don't want to compare myself to other teammates, to my other teammates, but I feel like he took as much interest in my life as he did in Mo Wagner's or the stars of our team.
For sure.
So the fact that he, it's like my dad, it didn't matter who it was, whether it was Josiah at McDonald's, who I just mentioned, or CEO of a big company, everyone mattered. And Coach Beilein, from my experience, had a very similar family line. So
very cool. Very cool. Well, that's probably a good place to leave things. Where when are we getting on the golf course, and what is the state of your game?
Well, the state of my game. So here's
this is the important stuff here.
So I've never done this before. So I played in a scramble today, for a golf outing, a Mass Mutual Cup in Mass Mutual Great Lakes, and I've never done this before. I had the wind behind me, a lot of wind behind me, on a par five, and I think it must have hit a sprinkler head or something, because this was crazy. So the par five was 515 yards. And we took my ball up in the bunker. Like it rolled into a bunker. Mm-hmm. We had a wedge into the green. I hit it far, but not that far. I mean, I think from the calculation, like the ball ended up 374 yards from the tee. I've never done that before.
Well, I think I might be taking back my invitation of us getting out on the court.
I've never done it before. I hit it far, but I hit it off. I think we took my drive only a couple of times today because I was never in the fairway. I hit it all over the place. I just get to see the whole course, right? We played it at TPC Michigan. That was the one.
Sure.
I wanted to get the whole layout.
That's a bad course if you're spraying the ball.
Well, why would you pay $100 to play somewhere and be in the fairway every time? That's boring.
Yeah, if that's what you want to tell yourself, I think that's a really good theory on the game.
Exactly. But to answer your question, if not this fall, next year for sure. For sure.
My man.
Sooner than later.
Looking forward to it. All right. Well, Austin Hatch, a wonderful guest. We greatly appreciate you coming on. I will pass along Nick's best to you, and I'm sure vice versa. But thank you so much for coming on, man. An inspiration as always, and really appreciate your time, man.
Yeah, of course, Brandon. Thanks for having me. Great to catch up again, and wish you and yours all the very best. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. I seen hard times all my day.